And for Ukrainians, it's not the question of whether we can or cannot tolerate corruption. It's the question of survival. Because if Ukraine is to win this war, it has to be strong and it cannot afford any corrupt officials to make money on something which should go toward its victory on the front line.
Global companies face unprecedented risks and challenges in today's economy. To mitigate these legal and economic risks, companies are rapidly embracing and elevating the importance of robust ethics and compliance programs to promote positive corporate citizenship. On Corruption, Crime, and Compliance, you'll hear from industry leaders and insiders about how to create effective ethics and compliance programs that will mitigate risks and maximize financial performance. Here's your host, Michael Volkov.
Well, welcome, everybody, and we're really excited to have Haya Senyak, and I hope I pronounced that correct, here today, who's going to talk to us about Ukraine and corruption issues and anti-corruption issues. And we're really glad to have you, Haya. Thank you so much for joining us. I want to give a little bit of a bio background, but first off, thank you and welcome for being here.
Hi, Michael. It's my pleasure to be here. You almost did okay with my name, but the last name is Senyak.
Senyak. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Thank you. No. We got to make sure it's right from the beginning, and I appreciate that. So Haya Senyak. But let me give a little background on Haya. She's incredibly impressive in terms of her experience. She has a bachelor's and a first master's degree in international relations and international public law from Ukraine, followed by a master's degree in comparative law from the London School of Economics. She further pursued PhD studies at the University of Essex. With a background in international public law, comparative law, and international relations, Haya has developed a career as an international lawyer and analyst. But even more interesting is her professional experience includes roles with Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, various UN agencies and nonprofit organizations, including the European Shoah Legacy Institute in the Czech Republic, which she led from 2014 to 2017. Since 2017, Haya has been working at the CEELI Institute. What does that stand for, Haya?
Well, it stands for Central and Eastern European Law Initiative, but we call it CEELI Institute.
CEELI Institute. Fantastic. Yeah.
The name comes from ABA CEELI project, which was run by American lawyers in Eastern Europe in late 90s. And later on, we stopped being part of ABA, American Bar Association, but the same people who were working at ABA CEELI, they decided that they want to create a non-for-profit organization in Prague, and that's how we became CEELI Institute.
Fantastic. So you are based in Prague then? Well, the CEELI Institute is based in Prague. And it focuses on promoting the rule of law, like through professional training programs for judges, law enforcement, lawyers, prosecutors, civil society representatives, and investigative journalists. While its main activities are focused in Central and Eastern Europe, the Institute also develops rule of law and anti-corruption projects in Africa and South Asia. Side note, when I was at the U.S. Department of Justice, there were training programs that we participated in working with law enforcement, judges, prosecutors about criminal justice in Eastern Europe. It's absolutely an important function and an important work that you're doing with CEELI. So welcome, Haya, again, and what an impressive background, and thank you for all your contributions to the rule of law, I guess would be a way of sort of shorthanding it. So we're grateful to have you visit with us today, and I thought in particular, and to discuss, you know, your current work at CEELI, and in particular, the current challenges Ukraine, we're going to obviously focusing on Ukraine today, is facing regarding corruption. Can you sort of, and I think it's a very dynamic situation given the Ukraine war and the invasion by Russia, but can you sort of give us a background on how corruption risks have evolved during the last few years in the Ukraine?
I think we should start with the process of which Ukraine started in 2014. In 2014, according to Transparency International Corruption Perception Index, Ukraine was at place of 144. And since then, in 2024, Ukraine is now at the place of 104. So it jumped 40 points in 10 years due to its anti-corruption policy, strategy, and building anti-corruption infrastructure. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that. So in 2014, when we had Maidan in Kyiv and pro-democratic forces were able to take the office of the president and Petro Poroshenko became the president of Ukraine instead of Russian puppet Yanukovych, then the civil society started to play more important role in forming countries' internal and external politics. And civil society was the leading force for creation of anti-corruption agencies. And these were national agency to prevent corruption, also National Anti-Corruption Bureau, which is better known as NABU, these anti-corruption detectives, and Specialized Anti-Corruption Prosecutor's Office, which was independent from the General Prosecutor's Office, and also the Higher Anti-Corruption Court of Ukraine. Those four pillars became instrumental in addressing high political corruption in the country. And together, they formed the basis for Ukraine trying to clear itself from corruption. There were also attempts to reform the Prosecutor General Office, and now that's the Secret Service of Ukraine, plus the National Police and Judiciary of Ukraine. And these reforms are still in progress. They haven't been finished yet. But what gives Ukrainian hope and what helped Ukraine to jump those 40 points, the table of TI and its Corruption Perception Index, were those agencies I just named, the digitalization of most of the governmental institutions, changing the rules for public procurement and using the e-procurement platform Prozoro, as well as reforms of banking and energy sectors.
You know what is interesting about that is, and I was kind of curious about the anti-corruption courts and having a specialized court for doing that. Can you describe that a little bit more? And what do you see of the benefits of that? Because there are thoughts in other contexts of having such specialized courts, you know, for other countries.
So I think that in Ukraine, it was a necessity. Due to the low prestige of judiciary in the country, there are a lot of questions about bribery, about corrupt practices in courts. During Yanukovych's time, what was particularly disturbing that a lot of places in courts were filled by relatives of politicians and also some relatives of existing judges. So the court system, and particularly how it was filled with new cadres, was completely abused by those who already had a very low reputation in the society. So when Ukraine faced a necessity to address high political corruption, that it needed a fresh start with a new court, the court which can build its reputation in eyes of the entire population. And that's why I say that High Anti-Corruption Court, which was built from scratch by all the judges, had to undergo examination on the knowledge of law plus integrity checks by international as well as national commission. I think that gave hope. The court was able to start anew with the very high expectation from the general public. We can discuss for hours whether or not the court is the most efficient institution. But one thing is for sure, that it is the best regarded judicial institution in Ukraine.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I actually find it interesting to have a specialized court like that with the expertise to sort of identify and handle issues. And to me, it's also indicative of a commitment by the country and by leadership to, you know, address the issue by having such a specialized court. And another point that I think you listed, which I think, Halya, is very important, is the reform with regard to procurement. You know, the digitization, the establishing of sort of, let's say, more transparent or more efficient procurement processes. And I think that reduces the risk by its nature, assuming it's implemented correctly, of corruption. And by bringing that about, I've noticed other countries, for example, Mexico is trying to do the same thing with regard to payments and contracts by putting the procurement system more on a platform and making it less about human interaction and more about following standard procedures. But what's your sense of that? If you can describe that a little bit more, because I think that's a very, very important part of the reform package.
Yes, Michael, you're absolutely right. In case of Ukraine, it played a huge role that Ukraine was able to introduce this platform. Platform per se will not be as important without all those watchdog organizations which are following information there. And in Ukraine, there is a very vibrant civil society and I would say very experienced journalists who are checking this platform on a daily basis. Any bigger contracts, they check the prices, they check whether there is any fraud among bidders. And as soon as they find out any information about potential fraud or potential corruption, they are informing the government first, the authorities, and if it doesn't help, then the wider public about what they discovered. And I think that that was of critical importance, particularly now when Ukraine is in war. And for Ukrainians, it's not the question of whether we can or cannot tolerate corruption. It's the question of survival. Because if Ukraine is to win this war, it has to be strong and it cannot afford any corrupt officials to make money on something which should go toward its victory on the front line. So one of the big scandals occurred when Ukrainian investigative journals discovered that the price for eggs for the military was 10 times as it should have been. And they started to investigate. They started to address first the authorities because since the beginning of the war in 2022, there was a pact between investigative journalists and authorities not to attack each other, just to stay united. But after the government failed to take any action on those super high prices for food for the military, then there was a publication. Then journalists started to talk about it and the society got very upset, discovering that at the time when average Ukrainians are dying, there is not a single family which hasn't lost at least one person on the front line, if not more. That's a very sensitive issue. So the government had no choice but to replace the Minister of Defense, to replace or dismiss his deputies and those people who were directly involved in implementing those particular procurement contracts. So I think that it is very important that there is this transparent platform where you can read about contracts which were signed and prices, which is even more important, and you can control whether or not there is potential corruption. And I think that in Ukraine, there is a number of organizations, a number of journalists who are able to do this and to cover more or less all contracts.
Wow. I think you said it perfectly when you said that this is a time where, I mean, Ukraine cannot afford any corruption in terms of when you're fighting for your survival. You know, that every dollar spent or every piece of resource is critical to the survival and their performance in the war. I mean, talk about an imperative that a country has to do something and reform and tackle this difficult issue for survival, as opposed to other countries that are not facing the same set of challenges. So I think you make a critical point about the survivability and the importance of the anti-corruption effort.
Yes, Michael, I'd like to add to this that Ukraine is heavily dependent on financial assistance from abroad. And, you know, the image of Ukraine being the most corrupt country in the world has been explored by those who do not want Ukraine to get this assistance. And Putin himself in November 2023 said corruption in Ukraine is unmatched anywhere in the world. And that statement was repeated by Orban also many times. Every single time, Orban is the president of Hungary. So every single time he is trying to block EU support for Ukraine, he's using the same statement. At the same time, we know that Russia dropped big time from TI Corruption Perception Index in the last 2 years. We know that Orban is also leading the country, which is considered to be one of the most corrupt in the European Union. So Ukraine needs to triple its effort, not just to present that it is able to have corruption in control and that it is open for assistance in fighting corruption. And I think that they are doing a good job because at the end of 2023, the head of the European Commission said that there are no questions to Ukraine. Because as you know, Ukraine also applied for the membership in the European Union. And as a part of its admission criteria, it needs to fight corruption. So all those planned steps which Ukraine was supposed to take were taken according to the preliminary agreements and according to the time schedule which was discussed. So Ukraine continues to work hard on its anti-corruption status. At the same time, recently, and those listeners of yours who are following events in Ukraine might be interested that whether or not Ukrainian anti-corruption agencies are under threat because of two scandals that deputy head and the head of the National Anti-Corruption Bureau were involved in the scandals of leaking information about current investigations to subjects of investigations. And that was a huge blow for Ukraine. It was a huge blow for Ukraine's supporters. But I have to say there is something optimistic in that, that criminal investigations against these leakages were opened by Ukrainians inside Ukraine, by the same institution. So Ukraine is capable of curing itself. The Anti-Corruption Committee of Ukraine's parliament today, as we are talking, is having a special session on the future of the National Anti-Corruption Bureau. And they invited the head of the bureau to discuss which steps need to be taken in order to improve the situation. And I think that these are signs that Ukraine will withstand all the turmoils. And also, again, in addition to this bureau, we have Independent Prosecutor's Office, which keep functioning fine. We have the High Anti-Corruption Court, which is also working fine, and the National Agency on Prevention of Corruption. So by the fact that we have not just one body responsible for fighting high-level corruption, but several of them, by the fact that by now NABU has the best trained detectives in the country, and there is still a lot of public trust in its functioning, I think that we have a chance to deal with the current problem.
You make a really good point about having the anti-corruption battle does not depend upon the performance of one organization. Here, what you're saying is there's so many institutions of the court system, the prosecutors, the investigators. In other words, that to corrupt all of those entities would be almost impossible because you have separate entities with independence and the ability to regulate themselves. I, you know, your point about curing themselves to me could almost be viewed as a positive in this sense that they were able to root out or they responded to potential problems by curing it and getting rid of these people. And it didn't go along silently and undermine the entire effort. So I think that what you've outlined and described to me is a more optimistic picture than a pessimistic picture. I really appreciate that because that's important. I wanted, though, to go back to one other issue, which I think, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it, because we have this performance that you've outlined in the institutions, and then we have the strain of the war, and then we have lots of money and resources and support coming into Ukraine for purposes of helping Ukraine and supporting Ukraine in the war. And what's interesting to me is to get your view of how are the institutions adapting to the fact that you have all these resources coming in? You have all these expectations from the West, from Europe, from the United States, from all of your allies as to how the support money is going to be used and the arms are going to be used. To me, that's a fascinating issue as to what strains you may have seen on the system, or how is the system able to respond and address all of a sudden these huge risks that are created with such a large amount of funding coming in. Any thoughts on that, Haya?
Oh, yes. Let's start with discussing how much money actually reaches Ukraine. And you probably heard about $61 billion US support for Ukraine. Do you know what is the percentage of this money which will never, ever leave the United States?
No.
72%. And out of the total support which the United States is providing to Ukraine, 86% in total will stay in the United States. It will be spent on replenish military stockpiles, also security assistance, and it will be spent on the current U.S. military operation and enhancing the capabilities of Ukrainian military. So a lot of the money which we are discussing will not leave the United States. And I think that is one of the measure on how not to overwhelm a country with a huge financial flow. Then another thing which you should also know that there are, for example, for EU money, there is Ukraine Facility. It's a mechanism which consists of Ukrainian government, EU authorities, and they are controlling all the assistance which is coming to Ukraine from the EU. So there is no uncontrolled money flow which is going toward Ukraine, you know. And then there is rapid damage and needs assessment, which consists again of the World Bank, government of Ukraine, European Commission, United Nations, and they are making the list of damages to infrastructure, to energy sector in Ukraine, and they establish financial needs for recovery and reconstruction. So Ukraine is not dealing with all this assistance alone. There is a lot of supervision from donor countries and donor organizations, and all this assistance is being very, very closely observed to eliminate potential corruption risks.
From your perspective, are there also resources or support being provided in terms of just the anti-corruption institutions? In other words, consulting and assistance and support to help the institutions that you've talked about. Are the allies providing that as well?
Yes, absolutely. And here I'm very proud that I'm working for Seeley Institute, because our institute started in 2014 to provide specialized trainings for anti-corruption agencies in not just in Ukraine, but all over the region of Central and Eastern Europe. And we've been conducting trainings for investigators, for prosecutors, also for judges on important issues such as asset recovery, international cooperation, financial investigation, cybercrime, cryptocurrency tracing, you name it. So all these trainings, the objective of them is to support these anti-corruption institutions. And since most of Seeley Institute's trainings are regional, it's also a great opportunity for law enforcement and prosecutors to build their own personal individual networks. where they can talk to their peers from other countries. And then when the situation occurs that they need support from Czech investigators or Polish prosecutors, they can directly contact them, very often even avoiding MLATs, or in addition to request for legal assistance. They know whom to ask, you know, they know how to get help. And this informal networking, I think that plays also an important role. Just to finish this, I wanted to say that Institute is able to provide this kind of assistance with the US government support. The State Department is providing us with grants so that we can reinforce further anti-corruption infrastructure in Ukraine.
So, Halya, thank you. We're getting close to the end, but I wanted to get your thoughts on sort of your view for the future and what needs to be done. Is there legislation, initiatives that you see as being necessary to maintain the momentum that's going on in the Ukraine in terms of the anti-corruption effort?
So I will mention just a few points from the recently developed strategic plan or action plan of the National Agency for Corruption Prevention. And these are optimizing functions of the state and local self-government authorities, digitalization, transparency of activities and data disclosure, and ensuring inevitability of legal responsibility for corruption and corruption-related offenses is another critical point. Forming corruption intolerance by education, by introducing anti-corruption compliance for businesses as mandatory, establishing culture of integrity and respect of law. I think that these are just some of the steps which need to be taken further in Ukraine. It's not that they are not taking, they are taking, but they need, Ukraine needs to continue with this. Another big step forward would be the reform of the security service of Ukraine and making them do their intelligence, counterintelligence work without including them in investigating economic crimes. And further reform of judiciary of Ukraine would be also helpful. The support of the civil society oversight and civil society's role in reconstructing, rebuilding Ukraine. So these are the necessary steps, and all of them are taking place now in Ukraine. So even though it's getting harder and harder to live there, I just talked to my mom today and she said that by now 8 hours they have no electricity at all. And now it's summer, it's an easy time. What's going to happen when there will be no electricity, no heat in the winter? I don't know. I don't know. But I hope that my people are strong enough, and working with the Seely Institute, I'll do everything what we can to support them, to support those anti-corruption institutions, to support investigative journalists, civil society activists, to help Ukraine to get its transparency and data disclosure, to take even one step further its digitalization, because it is important. And nowadays in 21st century, digitalization, if done properly, helps to avoid quite a number of corruption risks. So we will do what we can.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting though, is that the Biden administration in the United States basically took the anti-corruption issue and made it into a national security issue and elevated the importance of it. And frankly, the probably prime example of that connection is what's happening in Ukraine. In terms of it's a national, it's not just an economic crime issue, it's a national security issue, the way you've described it. And I think the Biden administration elevating that and making it a national security issue, I think hopefully has raised the priority of the need for fighting corruption all around the world. But in particular, I think demonstrating the link between national security and corruption is just imperative. And to me, the Ukrainian battle in this area is emblematic. It is the perfect example and the perfect representation of that type of connection. And you said it beautifully in the beginning, Haya, when you said this is an issue of survival and using the resources that you have for survival. So your speaking today has inspired me and hopefully the listeners to help, to contribute, and to support CLE and its efforts, and you in particular as well. And let me say this, if people want to reach you to speak about this more or find out ways to help, how should they reach out to you? What's the best way to contact you?
So the best way to contact me would be via email. It is my first name, halina.senek@sealy.eu.
We'll put that in the show notes for the show so that if people want to reach out to you, that the email address will be there. But thank you again, Haya. Thank you. Congratulations on all your great work, and we admire your efforts, and let's stay in touch, because if there are issues that come up that you need to speak about, we'd be more than happy to have you back and update us on what's going on and ways that we can help.
Thank you, Michael. It's been a great pleasure being your guest, and thank you very much for this opportunity to talk about anti-corruption in Ukraine. Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, the best way to support the show is by subscribing on your favorite listening platform. To learn more and connect with Michael Volkov, go to volkovlaw.com.